This is the WillCast, presented by Wisconsin Lighting Lab. My name is Adam Rupp, and my guest today is Nick Putty. Nick, welcome.
Thank you.
So Nick is an applications engineer here at Wisconsin Lighting Lab, and also has the recent title of head brewmaster.
I actually recently added that to my email signature this morning. So
that's cool. It's a real thing. Why not? So I guess I want to talk a little bit about your background in brewing and kind of how we tie that into the lighting business and how we can serve our customers through brewing and some other things that are related to Wisconsin. But I guess, Nick, how'd you get into home brewing?
Well, obviously at the start, I like beer. So that was the first part of it. I started with a 1 gallon system, stovetop, little 1 gallon jug. You can do everything in your kitchen. I'm like, go and try this out. See how it goes.
And how long ago was that?
So my oldest daughter is 5, and I think my wife was pregnant with her at the time. So going on like 6 years.
Okay.
And then from there, I made a couple good batches. Like, 1 gallon batch only gets you about 10 to 11 bottles. So I'm like, all right, we gotta upscale this a little bit. So then I bumped it up to a 5 gallon system, which you have to kind of move outdoors a little bit if you're doing home brewing with that big of a batch. That gets you about 2 cases worth. So did about a handful of batches out there. Little inconvenient. You got to play the weather. Couple times I had to put up a piece of plywood to block the wind from blowing my burner out. It was just a 1 kettle system, so that has its pros and cons to it. Did about half a dozen batches that way, for different events, birthdays, barbecues, what have you. Took a little bit of a back burner, pardon the pun, for a while when we had our second daughter, so I mainly made a couple batches probably after that. Again, based kind of like on events coming up or whatever. Tried doing some winter brewing in the garage in the middle of November, which didn't go well at all, because you're now playing with the temperature. And then fast forward a few years later, and we have now more of a much more state-of-the-art system than compared to what I was archaically working on probably. And yeah, it's a great marketing tool we've been using. Got probably close to coming up on like 20 batches maybe now.
How many different recipes?
Recipe-wise, I think we're at about half a dozen. Did a gluten-free. I got another gluten-free teed up probably in the coming weeks. Did a recently an IPA that went over really well. That was a 5 gallon batch. We're going to up that to a 10 gallon. Our Will Ale is kind of our staple so far. That's getting canned up next week. Did a stout for Stout Month, which is in February, and then a kind of pseudo lager we did for kind of a marketing tool with some of our outside sales reps. And so yeah, about a half a dozen different recipes, couple other kind of in the hopper, looking at maybe trying to do an NA beer because there's a market for that, just like there's a market for gluten-free.
Absolutely.
So, you know, kind of play to the market, play to the seasons, and yeah.
So aside from drinking the beer, what do you think draws home brewers and just brewers in general to beer making? I guess, were you a chemistry guy in high school? Or
not really.
Okay.
Just the variety and styles. Like, chances are if you're, and nothing against, you know, the Busch Latte drinkers out there, but they don't tend to be the you know, very interested in the homebrew process.
Yeah.
So, you know, I love a variety of beers. There's nothing I won't try. I've at one point had a pizza beer in my life, which was
pepperoni or sausage.
It didn't matter. It was horrible. It was absolutely horrible. But you know, it was there and I tried it. It's like, I'll try any style of beer. With that, you know, you want to try making your own to a certain extent. The other part of it I always tell people is brewing is 20% brewing, 80% cleaning. Anybody who walks past the brew room probably sees me cleaning stuff more than anything. So if you don't like saying doing dishes, you're not going to enjoy home brewing because it's all about cleanliness and sanitation. And I do the dishes in our house, so I'm not a stranger to a little bit of dishwashing. Yep. So everything's clean. Yeah, if you don't like cleaning, you're not going to enjoy home brewing.
So when you got into it, and even now, what type of podcasts and online educational resources did you use to kind of learn the craft? I know you also use some iPhone applications,
yep.
But what are the two or three things that really helped you along the way?
A podcast, shout out to the Four Brewers. They tend to just more so critique commercially brewed beers now, but they still touch on home brewing here and there. I found that just by I had to do some work on my boat. I didn't feel like listening to music. It was too early for a brewer game. So, like, you know what? There's got to be a podcast out there for homebrewing. There's a podcast for everything. There's a podcast for lighting. We're talking right now. So, listened to a few of their episodes. I follow them pretty closely. And then, yeah, online tools. I mean, in this day and age, you can find tools for anything. So I use a lot of different tools for building recipes, getting my gravity readings in check, seeing where my efficiency and the whole brew system comes in.
And what do you mean by efficiency?
So efficiency, much like LED.
So in our world, it's lumens per watt or foot candles per dollar.
Exactly. And in that, you're talking basically extracted sugars from grain. So our system, we're floating around about a 75 to 80% efficiency, which means we're getting 75 to 80% of the sugar out of the grain we're using. In my driveway brewing days, I was probably only at 60 to 70 at times. So you have to use more grain to get the amount of sugar you want. So we, in turn, use less grain to get more sugar and, you know, based on whatever alcohol reading.
Do you know what any of the metrics are around, like, the craft beer operations or some of the bigger breweries, what their efficiencies are?
Bigger breweries will get up to 85 to 90. If they're using like extracts, which is you're basically just boiling down grain and just pulling everything out of it, which is like your macro breweries, your Coors, your Miller. With they're using extracts and high fructose corn syrup, which that's a whole advertising back and forth between Coors and Miller and everybody. That's where they get into the 90s because they're just drilling it down, and it's mass produced. Your craft brewers, they're probably in that 85 to 90% range, depending on what they're brewing.
So to get into a little chemistry for a minute, what is the basic process in terms of inputs, the processing equipment, and then the outputs or the product? What are the mechanics of what's happening? What's the chemistry of what's happening? You talked about efficiency of turning grain into sugar, and then beyond that, how do you turn sugar into alcohol?
Sure. So technically, I don't make beer. Yeast makes beer. I make what they call wort. And wort is...
So you make yeast food.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I'm feeding yeast. That's exactly what I'm doing. So if we do a 10-gallon batch, which gets you about 4 cases, I use about 20 pounds of grain, give or take, depending on the alcohol level we're trying to shoot for there. So take 20 pounds, measure it out, grind it up, get the water up to 165-ish, dump in all our crushed up grain. Basically, you're making a giant vat of oatmeal for like about an hour. And then from there, you pull all of the what they call wort, which is all the extracted sugars and flavor out of the grain. Move that over to your boil kettle. You'll rinse out the last bit of grain, get those last remaining sugars. And then what I'll do is get to about 11, 12 gallons. You lose about a gallon in the boil process. The boil sanitizes it. That's where you add your hops. Again, depending on what type of beer it is, it could be just only a couple ounces of hops in a beer, or in that IPA, which is only a 5-gallon batch, I probably used 4 times the amount of hops than I would in like our Will Ale, but IPAs have more hops in them. So from there, cool it down, put it in the fermenter. You're usually looking for a temperature of about 70 to 75 degrees. That's where yeast likes doing its work. You pitch the yeast in, let it do its thing for about 2 weeks. The next day after a brew day, if there's bubbles coming out of the fermenter, that means the yeast's doing its thing. And just sit and wait, and from there we'll go ahead and carbonate it. I've been using just CO2 tanks, put it on CO2, you crank it up. And then we got a canner about 2 months ago, so instead of bottles, we got cans now, which are a lot more efficient to ship, a little more shipper friendly. And then, yeah, send it out the door.
So who are your favorite craft beer companies? And I guess, do you have any brewing heroes? Are there anybody within these companies that you follow?
Not specifically probably brewers, other than like the Four Brewers podcast. There is one guy that is kind of a commercial brewer, so I kind of follow what he's doing just because I've heard him talk.
Sure.
I've sent him my beer. He's liked my beer. So, you know, there's a little bit of connection there. Bell's over in Michigan. I really enjoy some of their stuff. Two Hearted is probably top five beer for me. That's in my fridge in the garage right now. Got to enjoy New Glarus, you know, local staple. You can't really go wrong there. Other than that, it's what's new, what's different. I'll probably spend anywhere from 10 to 15 minutes at the grocery store in town if I'm doing grocery shopping and just like, all right, what's new? What I haven't tried. Mm-hmm. And that looks interesting. Grab a sixer of that. And that might be my brewery to go to for a bit, see what they're kicking out. And if there's a beer that I've heard of that I just see distribution in Wisconsin, finally grab some of their stuff for a bit. So it's a revolving door. Myself and Jake in the office here, we both use the Untappd app, which you can kind of track your beer. It's kind of like the social media of beer drinking. And I think I have close to 850 check-ins of different beers I've had over the course of 6 years or something like that.
Nice. That's pretty cool. So back to the chemistry for a minute. It seems like a good chunk of the process is pretty uniform regardless of the ultimate product. What are the things that you tweak or change to get some of the different flavors or different types of beer?
The grain is a big part of it. The hops, the amount of hops, when you put the hops in the boil. If you put hops in at the beginning of the boil, those are your bittering hops. That's what gives it the bitter flavor. If you put it in towards the end, it'll give you more of the aromatics of the hops and not so much the bitter taste of it. On the chemistry side of it, one thing we've added is we start doing what they call a yeast starter. So say I have a graduated or a flask with a little bar in there, and I'll dump in the yeast, and then there's a can of wort, which is just kind of pre-mixed, add some water in, and that kind of jump starts the yeast, kind of gives it a head start on what it needs to do. So that makes for cleaner beer. It makes the fermentation more efficient, you know, so you shave a day or two off of it with that. I have an oxygen tank now I've added into the brew room to, again, oxygenate the yeast and the wort, and again, just makes cleaner beer. But as far as chemistry side, the biggest thing going back to is cleaning,
yep.
Sterilization.
Filtered water. An RO system, which we have now.
We got an RO system. In fact, the very first batch of beer I made was before we got that. And
you
can
tell.
Yeah, I don't think anybody else can necessarily tell, but I tasted the water before I started. And I'm like, that is definitely soft water.
Yep.
Like, let's run with it. And I could still get a taste of it in the end, but now that taste is completely gone. The RO filter pulls a lot of that out, which is nice.
Okay. Well, let's talk about how we ended up with a brew lab or you know, the equipment here at Wisconsin Lighting Lab. I mean, you and I think had been talking about it for a few years, kind of in a joking way. It's like, hey, someday we'll have our own, you know, brewery on site and give stuff away to customers. And then when we built the new building, I remember meeting with the architect, and it started out with a joke with him. It's like, that's where the brew room's going to be. And he kind of like, ha ha, yeah, right. So we ended up, you know, more or less over time building it out, designing it out. I know you had spec'd out some equipment,
mm-hmm.
A few years ago. And then we ended up, investing in that equipment. But I guess in the idea, I believe, and it's changed a little bit, but we were going to have a wiffle ball field outside,
yep,
and more or less have an outdoor showroom for our sports lighting fixtures. So when customers came through, they could more or less play wiffle ball underneath our lights.
Yeah,
and the idea was that they would walk into the showroom, and there would be a wall of hops growing underneath our lights,
yep.
And we would use those hops to brew beer, and then customers could grab a beer, go up to the balcony, and watch a game underneath the lights.
Yep,
with beer that was made from hops growing under lights. So We checked a couple of those things off the list. Unfortunately, the city was not okay with the wiffle ball field, but and we're still working on growing the hops under the lights. But we do have a fully functional brewery.
Yes.
Now, equipment wise, so whose equipment did you end up going with, and what are some of the specs on that setup?
So we went with Spike Brewing, based out of Milwaukee. That's actually the kettle I had in my driveway that I had been using. Locally based, I like their equipment, so I'm like, I want to stick with these guys. They're right in our backyard. The setup we have, it's they'll call it a 15-gallon system. Essentially, what that means is you have the capacity of 15 gallons of fluid, but you have to have space for boil off, things like that. So we get 10 gallons out of our system. So we have, it's essentially a scaled down version of what, you know, a craft brewery would have. We have three vessels, one that has our hot liquid tank, which is basically just hot water, the wort tank, which is where all the grain gets dumped into, and then our boil kettle, which does just that, boils it down. We have two 10-gallon fermenters, so we can keep a couple different beers going at a time. We're actually looking to upgrade those to have cooling units, so we can actually carbonate within those units, take our carbonation down from a week to 24 hours. So once it's done fermenting, put it on CO2, cool it down to 40-some degrees, and in a day, it's ready to can and consume.
Man, that's sweet.
As opposed to a week, which I just moved some beer to keg right now, and I'll can next week, but slower process. So upgrading that. We have some smaller vessels that I had from home. Also, Randy actually had. Tracy bought them for his birthday several years ago, so he brought all that stuff in, so I'm kind of utilizing some of that equipment too. When it comes to these types of setups, it's just scale. You know, we're doing four cases, but if you ramp it up to, you know, a one barrel system where you're getting 10 cases, it's all the same equipment per se, just bigger.
In the kind of utility requirements, what type of electrical power and anything other than water and electrical that we had to put in? Is, I don't think there's any gas involved.
No, the only thing we really added was that I wanted in the room, as it was still getting planned out, was a floor drain. Not that I'd ever expect to need it, but if things go bad, it's better to have that liquid stay in that room versus going out into the hallway. So, yeah, no gas. If we did a larger system, maybe we would have looked at doing gas, but we're running 240. I forget the amperage. I think it's like, might be 40 amps on that system. But, yeah, straight 240. Electric actually is nice because you can make more consistent beer because it's all digital, so it's different temperature probes doing a lot of the work. I have two pumps that maintain moving fluids around that keeps temperatures where they need to be, and then I got, you know, a nice slop sink in there for cleaning up everything, because again, you always
back to that washing thing, right?
Exactly.
So what do we currently do with the Will Brew? I know you touched on that previously, but what type of requests are you going to? I guess one thing to clarify, we don't sell any of this.
No, everything, none of it is for sale.
Everything we do, everything we make is for either consumption at, you know, company events. You know, we give it away, or we give away six packs to customers.
Yeah.
And I think pretty much every sports job, we usually try and send a custom six pack. But what does that process look like? You get requests from the sales team, or how do we typically handle that?
Yeah, my role is more or less just keep making beer as much as possible. The more we have some old vintage lockers that came with the building that we're filling up, and it's keep those stocked as much as possible, which is why we had the second fermenter. So now I have double the capacity.
And what is the capacity? You said four cases, but I think with the second fermenter.
Yep, so now we're up to eight.
Eight, awesome.
And then if I do anything in the 5-gallon carboys I have, that's another two cases. So there's plenty of room now. But I just keep making beer. The sales team will get in touch with our marketing team. They'll it's like, hey, I got this, you know, Moore Road Park sports project. Marketing team throws together a layout kind of custom to that particular project, which the contractors, you know, typically don't even know. And we send them a six pack, maybe a 12 pack, if it's a really nice job. And, you know, they open it up and they, you know, they see their own custom, you know, label, of their project. This one has, you know, the lighting layout on it as well. So, you know, they're getting kind of creative with that. But, yeah, I just keep turning out beer, and the marketing team has, at this point, an endless list of projects to send it out to. And, yeah, it's kind of a...
So how do we get more capacity? It sounds like we need more capacity.
I just need to stop taking vacations when it goes out, too.
Jeez, oh, well, you need to take more vacations.
No, now it's we've got more of a schedule built out.
So equipment-wise, where's the bottleneck in the system right now?
The bottleneck was the fermenters. Okay. We just did our first like back-to-back batches where we had two going at once. So that's going to up our game quite a bit. Cooling down the fermenters internally versus moving it to kegs and carbonating that way, that's going to eliminate a bottleneck. And then from there, I'm looking into, can we package off the fermenters, which we should be able to, but that's something I want to see if other people have done it. Any headaches, you know, going back to those online resources, what have guys done, you know, what issues have they ran into, if any. Yeah, just keep them full.
Nice. You'll have to contact the Spike Brewing guys and get them up here for a podcast. You said they're a Wisconsin company?
Yeah, right down in Milwaukee.
Nice.
Yeah, locally. They do all their stainless steel welding down there.
Wow.
I think some of their kettles, they're stainless, so I believe they're importing some of that stuff, which is not a rarity. And when it comes to stainless, you look at anything that's made stainless, it's probably coming from overseas, but all the
processing,
work,
the assembly, the fabrication, the design is all done right
here
in Wisconsin.
And their nano system they came out with earlier in the year, I think in their marketing tools, they said about 80% of different components or engineering or manufacturing was done within the U.S. And of that 80%, I believe 75% of that was done within Wisconsin.
Yeah, they seem a lot like us.
And yeah,
they must have some pretty good kind of electrical skills as well.
Yeah, I mean
there's a pretty impressive control box and
I would say they share a lot of similarities to us. Whether it's our the marketing I see them do, it seems very similar to us. They're developing innovation on the fly, much like we do, is a big part of it, and then using local resources.
Yeah.
You know, we use, between Musa and see Metal Fab and a few others, keep it local. And
tap
it
into that Wisconsin supply chain, right?
Exactly.
Cool, man. Well, thanks for coming on, and I'm sure we'll have you back and reach out to those Spike guys. We'll have them on the show.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, man. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.